The following program presents the views of its participants and producers. It does not necessarily represent the views of WMRW or its license holder, RootsWork.
Hello, everybody. This is Amy, and it is time for the 5-H show, and I am live here with a guest in the studio, which is why I was fiddling with some of the programming here, making a quick transition to the 5-H show. And the 5-H show stands for health, happiness, harmony, humor, and humanity. And today, we have a very special guest in the station today. I'm really honored to have Lauren Palmer. Lauren Palmer is a recent graduate in classics from the University of Vermont. She is a native Vermonter, a writer, and a homeschool tutor. She is also the organizer and co-author of the Student Declaration 2023, an open letter addressed to university students and institutions of higher education worldwide, reflecting on the incredible impacts of COVID-19 policies. The declaration was published in October 4th of last year in echo of the Great Barrington Declaration, which was signed on October 4th 3 years prior. To date, the Student Declaration Project has collected 959 signatures, and it continues to welcome students, faculty, staff, and community members to read, sign, and share. And you can find more information about the Student Declaration at studentdeclaration2023.org, and that's where you can read the declaration. But for the next hour, we are so lucky to have Lauren here. I've been tracking her down to get her on the show here, and we found each other around a project we're working on right now. And so it's totally timely that we have this discussion for a cost-benefit analysis. And I've been very concerned, just knowing through the grapevine friends and family who have, you know, young folks in higher education through this COVID experience, and how that has affected their learning, their progress, their futures, you know, whether they're in sports or they're in a trade school. I knew a young man, he was going into his last year of trade school and had to put it off to avoid the COVID policies. And what does that do for your, you know, you're learning, you're in midstream, or you're just starting, or you're on your last year. I mean, wherever you were in your higher education progress, it must have had a huge impact. So we are so lucky today to have Lauren today. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you so much for having me today.
Yeah, thank you for taking the trip. And here in Warren, it is February, what is it? The
19th, I think.
Oh, 18th, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, I want to make sure we let folks know if you're listening live. It is February 18th, Sunday. Yeah, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. Lots of exciting new things going on in my life, around the world.
Yeah. It's an exciting time to be here.
It's an exciting time to be alive, yep.
Yes, and with wonderful people like you. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I thought maybe if you could start out reading the beginning of this declaration. I think you summed it up so well, or you and your team mm-hmm. and your friends, and we'll hear all about that.
Sure, definitely. You may just read the first two paragraphs.
Yeah, the first, okay. Thank you, although the whole thing is great, and folks can find it at studentdeclaration2023.org.
Sure. So we actually came up with a much longer title. So our full title for this project is A Declaration and Reflection on COVID-19 Policies by Student Representatives of Universities and Colleges Across the United States of America and the World, signed October of 2023. When at the end of any great or terrible storm, we emerge, as now we do, out of 3 years of an unprecedented global phenomenon, into a moment of silence, we are presented an opportunity. an opportunity to pause, to reflect, and to evaluate those events which took place and those actions undertaken in the depths of the upheaval. Such is the moment we are now offered, and we, student representatives from across the United States of America, Canada, and the world, having been swept up into this storm of COVID-19 responses for the last 3 years, urge now serious reflection. We were told that mask, vaccine, and lockdown mandates would be justified by their benefits, yet in light of the incredible harms these mandates cost, such mandates cannot be justified today. An undeniable psychological toll fell on every student facing pressure from peers, professors, and university administration to comply with mandates, and many, denied face-to-face contact with others for over a year, found themselves forced to accept medical coercion under duress. Those who chose not to vaccinate, a choice owed to all people under a truly democratic society, whether for medical or personal motivations, were made outcasts. They were socially ridiculed, segregated, and blamed, losing scholarships, academic and social opportunities, jobs and internships, medical autonomy and privacy, their ability to see friends and family, all campus platforms for free and uncensored speech, and the most basic human rights of compassion, dignity, and empathy. Those who suffered vaccine injuries were shunned and dismissed. With their stories suppressed, our right to informed consent was non-existent. And on every college campus around the world, in a time where dialogue should have been encouraged, and in those same classrooms where truth, depth, and critical thought were once avowed, all conversation was silenced. Students forfeited physical and emotional freedoms in pursuit of doing good, or for the sake of convenience, believing the price would be only temporary, and sacrificing instead their self-integrity. Fear was empowered to run rampant. Many in this confusion mistook fear for righteousness. Our sense of compassion was manipulated, and the world forgot its humanity, for only a majority possessed by a blind madness can have convinced itself that dividing and hurting any part of its community, however small, is a just cause. The list of further freedoms lost or challenged during this time known as the COVID-19 pandemic is too extensive to be fully acknowledged here.
Yes, that's a mouthful for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a really good summary, you know, of what folks went through. Were you at UVM during this?
I was. My time was split. So I actually started at St. Michael's College, and I spent a year there. And my first half of my year there, it was fall of 2020 to spring, summer 2021 was when I was at St. Michael's. So I started there in the midst of, after lockdowns, in the midst of mask mandates, but vaccine mandates hadn't come out yet. And that was really what happened in the spring of my time at St. Michael's, is that's when the vaccine rollout came out. And so lots of interesting shifts happened within my year there. And it was really interesting to track. You know, we can talk about some of those later. But so, yes, I was at St. Michael's for a year during one part of all of those steps throughout the pandemic. And then when I actually got into this declaration project, organizing and authoring that, this was at UVM, so the fall of last year.
So you literally started in 2020 what sort of requirements were students asked to follow?
So fall of 2020 at St. Michael's, the biggest requirement was just the masks. I don't remember them asking us to do the social distancing thing anymore, but definitely masks. And it was masks not just in classrooms, but you were supposed to wear them between classes, outdoors, anywhere that you could see people. The only situation you were told you were allowed not to wear masks was in your own dorm area with your own three or four roommates, whoever you lived with. So those were the main requirements. And you could see that has an obviously massive psychological effect on your entire student population.
Right. What was that like?
So speaking from my own personal experience, I think for the first part of that year, I was just so determined to go back to school that I just was like, okay, I'll wear the mask, I'll fly under the radar, and I'll get through it. And I think I didn't start to realize until later on that year, I think really when the vaccine mandates came out, because I had to start thinking about things differently and thinking, you know, this isn't working, and why isn't it working? As soon as the vaccines came out, I started also thinking about the masks more. And there was an interesting moment that I had within my own life. There's a little convenience store right next to St. Michael's, and I had gone to, like, with my roommates to get Ben and Jerry's or something. And when we were walking over, actually, I might have just been alone that time, but I had taken off my mask when I had gone outside. There's nobody else around. And one of the other things that had happened on campus at this point is they sort of had, I think it was actually a phone reporting system, that if you saw people without their masks or having parties with other people or in big groups, that you could report them if you knew who they were, presumably. And that also adds a lot to a distrusting environment on campus. But in this particular time I had gone out, I was going into the convenience store and I put my mask on and, you know, it was required. I came back out and I remember thinking as soon as I got out, gosh, I don't really want to take my mask back off when I walk on campus, because I've, like, people haven't seen my face. I feel a little nervous. And just having been in a mask for, I don't know how many months it had been then, 5-6 months, around my peers, around my teachers, I didn't realize it, but it changed something in my mind to think that there was a kind of safety in having a mask on psychologically. And it was at that moment that I was like, I got to take this thing off. So I kind of transitioned out of that and decided to leave St. Michael's later. And that was a part of that decision.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. So there was almost, you know, self-observed your own dependency on it, mm-hmm. in a way. Yeah, because getting to know people for the first time with a mask, not being allowed to gather, which is what young people want to do. Mm-hmm. That's the whole point, really, mm-hmm. you know? Was it hard? I mean, were people, like, bucking the system? Were they revolting? Were they fleeing? Like, what was the reaction that other students had?
Yeah. At St. Michael's, very small campus, I don't remember there being a lot of acting out going on. I think there were some underground parties that got broken up. I'm not big into any kind of social stuff myself, so I would have been outside of those circles anyway. I think in general, the environment was just one of, even your own neighbors, you can't trust them for whatever reason. There was a disconnect between professors and students. And that really affects the classroom environment as well. It was harder to have classes. It was harder to get connected with even the person I'm sitting next to at the table at my desk. But in general, I would say it was very much an environment of conformity. Like, most people went along with it. And I think really even people that might not have agreed, you'd never know about each other because there was such an environment of don't talk about it. Mm. And the silence on having a discussion on masks and then later on vaccines, I think that silence was so oppressive that everybody was too afraid to even try to rebel at all.
Yeah, that was definitely one of the psychological parts that were the most difficult for mm-hmm. me too, right? The silence around it. We weren't allowed to discuss it. And as the rules didn't make sense, you know, here I hear you saying at St. Mike's with students from all over the, who knows, world, right? Traveling to come there, you guys didn't have to social distance. Yet students in our elementary schools at this same time, in many classrooms, most probably mm-hmm. across Vermont, were made to keep their desks 6 feet apart from, you know, I mean, it's just, it's nonsensical.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah, I think one of the things that allowed the St. Michael's administration to feel like it's okay if we don't have the 6 feet apart is that I don't believe we were supposed to leave campus unless it was to get groceries or necessities. And we weren't supposed to leave the state.
Oh.
And I know that when we first arrived, anybody in like the red zones or the yellow zones in the country or the world were supposed to test and everything else. So I think if you were in Vermont, you were okay, but they had kind of a closed campus going on.
There was testing and quarantine rules. Did you have, like, if you went home for Thanksgiving, you had to, or were you allowed to go home?
They changed Thanksgiving that year, so they actually had us go home for Thanksgiving and stay online the rest of the time. So we didn't even come back at all.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And what was that like for learning?
Yeah, you can imagine. I mean, a lot of my classes got shortened. Although I have to say that I think three of my classes around that time were already online. So I had been used to having that. But that creates its own issues because I remember at the end of the year, I went to meet a professor who I'd only had online. And it's totally different seeing them in person. We passed each other and then turned around and we're like, are you? So, yeah.
Yeah. Wow. And then when were the masks allowed to come off?
I was not in school when that transition happened. Mm-hmm. I left St. Michael's after all of the vaccines came out and after finding that there was absolutely no flexibility with administration or, you know, with student population there. So I decided to take a break fall of 2021. So by the time I went back to UVM, they had dropped all masking, all social distancing, everything else. The only thing that was still in place was the vaccine mandates.
Oh, so those, yeah.
Yeah.
So you took a year off.
I did, yeah.
Yeah, to just get away, mainly because of the mandates, right?
Yeah, because of the mandates.
It was just unworkable.
Yeah, it was. I started writing letters to the St. Michael's administration around the time when the vaccine started to be in discussion. And there were some interesting moments that happened, even in classes when they started being discussed, because there was almost an opening, which was really interesting. And I was a little too shy at that point to really want to say anything openly in classes. But like I had a teacher in one class who, you know, a couple months later was not willing to talk about anything. But in that moment, before the vaccines had ever been mandated, when they hadn't even come out yet, she asked in the beginning of class, she's like, what do you guys think about this? Do you think you'll get it? Like, you know, what do you think? And I didn't want to say anything at that point because the climate was still such that it felt like if you did say, like, oh, I have a question or something, that you might still be slammed for it. But it was a really interesting question looking back, because even the openness to ask that question got totally squashed about a month or two later.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I appreciate how you and your team described this in the beginning, that these institutions of higher learning, this is supposed to be the place to question, mm-hmm. to discover yourself, right? To make your stand, to explore your ideas and bounce them off each other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had a lot of fun, actually, in the section that I read was kind of our reflections on the last 3 years and looking at the harms and losses. And then the next section, if people go and read it on our website, is really about looking forward and asking people also to reflect on what have our universities been, what did we intend them to be, and in the future, how do we bring those qualities back? And one of the things that we did with that section was bring in some very famous mottos from colleges and universities around the world. Because I had been walking around, as I'm sure all students on different campuses were, looking at mottos written everywhere. It's under every school sign. St. Mike's had some, like, do well, be good. UVM had a really interesting sign up that I forget exactly what it was, but it was something about critical thinking. And so when you really look at all of those signs together, we were, you know, laughing about that and saying, you know, it's perfect. That's what we want. We just need to do it.
It looks like we agree. We're just confused about the process here.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember walking on the sidewalks outside of UVM. This must have been like 2020, 2021, you know, that school year going to 2022. This is on the sidewalk, on the streets, outside of UVM, as you go to the intersections. Mm-hmm. They had cows on the sidewalk telling you how to stand 6 feet apart for these college students. Uh-huh. And I'm thinking, this is a medical research, you know, university. Yeah. I mean, really, where is the thinking? Mm-hmm. It was just lunacy and the silence.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. So then you switched to UVM, and how did that go?
Yeah, it was an interesting transition. I felt like my time there went in different stages. And initially, again, I just went in with the goal of wanting to finish my bachelor's so that I would have that under my belt for whatever came next, whatever my next steps were. And throughout my time at UVM, I realized I wanted to do more than just get my bachelor's. I wanted to do something at UVM with speaking up about the mandates, doing something else, because it started to feel like I don't want to leave this environment with having said my piece about what's happened.
Yeah, and the confidence. Mm-hmm. I know from experience, you know, the confidence we gain from that, it really can propel you, gives you something to stand on. I mean, mm-hmm. because I can't imagine for folks who didn't find their way to speaking their truth through this process, what was the message they learned? What were the habits they've ingrained, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think this is really important that folks meet you and hear about this project and hear about things that people are doing.
Yeah.
So for folks just tuning in, I am speaking today with Lauren Palmer, and she is a recent graduate in classics from the University of Vermont. And she is a native Vermonter and came here from Burlington today, right, to visit with us here in Warren, Vermont. And so that you were studying classics, I find that super interesting.
Yeah.
Because what were classics teaching you? It's sort of like those mottos, you know, of thinking critically. Uh-huh. And, wow, that must have been really wild to talk to your professors. Were they getting the juxtaposition of reality versus?
Yeah, it is an interesting question. I had one professor at St. Michael's who was my philosophy and ancient languages professor, and he was actually one of the few professors that after I wrote my first letter and I had sent that not just to the administration but to the professors I currently had, because you never know where somebody is open to listening or where they might be in the same boat as you are. And this one professor that I had was very open about talking, and he immediately sent me a note and said, hey, can we meet? I totally understand what you're saying. I'd like to hear what your experiences are. And he retired right after I left. But he was one of the few professors that was congruent with, this is what the classics are teaching, this is what Plato is teaching with dialogue, the need to sit down at a table, come as friends, not as, you know, enemies, quote unquote, where everybody has their own idea and agenda that you want to press onto the other person, but come to the table as friends and actually listen. So he was probably my only professor that was really kind and really open to listening. In general, UVM is a much larger school, so it is a lot harder to find any openings there. But even at St. Mike's, it's incredibly hard. It's hard to know where to start when you're trying to find people that are just open to listening, especially today. But it was an interesting thing there would be moments in classes, whether it was in classics, I also did a lot of courses in history, which is another interesting thing to study because you can see the cycles of history and how there are a lot of events that look a lot like what's gone on in the past 3 years. And teachers will teach about the historical events with no awareness of, is that a potential repetition happening today? So I did have moments like that. I did have an interesting moment, not related to classics, related to a class in modern Chinese history. And we had been talking about the Chinese Cultural Revolution, which very similarly was sort of student-driven in a way, a lot of brainwashing, and a lot of violence that the students ended up getting kind of swept up in without realizing it in the moment. And there was an interesting day where he sat down, the professor put a picture up on the screen that was one of these, a photograph of one of these events where the students would go and pull out a professor from class, and they'd put him up on trial in the public square, and he had one of these hats on that has all of his crimes, supposed crimes, written on it, and all the students yelling at him. And my professor said, if this happened today, do you think any of you in our class, do you think you would recognize it, and do you think you wouldn't go along with it? And that was like my first few weeks at UVM, so I was like, I don't know if I want to say anything right now. But that was a really interesting moment, because all of my peers in the classroom were like, oh no, yeah, we'd recognize it, of course. And I thought,
Tap, tap, tap. Where's Jiminy Cricket to say, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's the wildest part. That's why what you are doing is so crucial, you know, to keep raising the subject and putting out the net really wide, because you are going to find like-minded folks, you know, that they're not willing to always, you know, speak up, but they'll come to you, and then they see that you're working on this, and then they find the courage. So excellent. So Lauren, and we'll hear about her team here, have written the Student Declaration 2023, and you can find that online, studentdeclaration2023.org, and join the almost 1,000 signatures now. Yeah, so let's talk about your project here. How did this start?
So actually, funny segue from the Modern Chinese History class, because I actually got the idea for writing an open letter by students or writing some kind of a student-led declaration from that class when we were learning about some of the activities that led up to the Tiananmen Square events. There was one letter that we read that was written by a group of students, addressed to one of the major local newspapers, and basically saying, this is what everybody's been saying about us, but we just want to make it clear that this is what our position is. And I had read that, and I think it kind of went in the back of my head and percolated, and I was like, you know, that's something we could do, and that's something that I think could actually have an impact. So come fall of last year, I think it was like late summer, August, I started putting feelers out to see if I could find other students locally or other students nationally, internationally, that would be interested in co-authoring this project with me. Because I'd considered initially doing it on my own, but it felt important to make it a collaborative project, not only to include other voices in it, but just to have that environment of a community behind it.
Yeah, following the classics, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So how did you find folks?
So I was lucky enough to actually get in contact earlier in the spring of last year with a few students who were running the College Edition podcast through the Vaccine Safety Research Foundation. I'm not sure if they hadn't been doing interviews in a while, but they have archived a lot of them. And I was able to appear on their show about some of the letters I had written to St. Mike's. And one of them was published through No College Mandates, which is another really awesome resource for college students, college parents, anything like that, No College Mandates. And so No College Mandates was a really good resource to just help me find students, because Lucia, who runs that, has obviously been getting lots of emails from different people. And then the students who ran this college podcast, they were also very important in helping me find other contacts.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so you all started putting your heads together?
Yeah, so we started meeting at the end of August. It probably took us about a month and a half, 2 months to put everything together. And we met once a week, occasionally twice a week, just in the evenings. We started off with looking at declarations, speeches, letters, from history that we thought could serve as models, whether in structure or content or whatever. So I know personally I read some of Martin Luther King Jr.'s speeches. I reread the Declaration of Independence, which I haven't done in a long time, so that was awesome. I read some different works, Civil Disobedience, different things like that. And we all put our brains together from there to figure out what we wanted to actually say with our declaration, because we had so many ideas. And we came up with our two main asking points, which is the first half of it, in a way, is a reflection. The second half is the declaration. So asking people to reflect on what has happened, because at least as a college student at St. Michael's and at UVM, the silence was the biggest thing that I was running into. And it was starting to feel like, and I think that was actually one of the key moments that I thought we have to do something, is when UVM and St. Mike's dropped their vaccine mandates, because I was like, yes. And I was also thinking, but we're about to walk away and nobody's going to have thought about, one, why did we have a mandate and why did they now drop it? And what happened in the last 3 years? So I was starting to feel like on campus, okay, everybody's like, oh, okay, we can go back to our normal lives. It's back to normal. And we won't have done anything with what happened. So yeah, I think that answers your question.
Yeah. And so it did ring a little bit of Declaration of Independence, definitely, mm-hmm. with the, you know, the stating of here's where we are and here are our asks. Mm-hmm. I love that. And you chose the date to coincide with the Great Barrington Declaration. Do you want to explain, yes, what that is, first of all, for folks listening who may not know, and why was that date important?
Yeah. So the Great Barrington Declaration was published October 4th of 2020, so 3 years before we decided to publish ours. And we were kind of searching for a date that could have a little more significance when we put it out. And the Great Barrington Declaration happened to be published around the same time that we were aiming for. And that declaration was written towards the beginning of the lockdowns by three medical doctors, concerned about the effects of lockdowns, the effects of social distancing, masks, all of those things. And it has had incredible reach, and a lot of people have referred back to it over the past 3 years.
Yeah, and folks sign on to that, right? Yeah. So it's this growing list of folks who, mm-hmm, are basically asking for this cost-benefit analysis. Like, whoa, time out. Let's come to the table and compare notes and just be honest.
Yeah.
Here, to me, if someone is being honest, they shouldn't run away from the table. What do they have to be, mm-hmm, afraid of? And so what's going on currently? Some folks might say, oh, well, yeah, they dropped the mandates. Mm-hmm. What are you so worried about? Just let's move on. I mean, what are folks still facing, and what are you worried about?
So I just graduated UVM in December. So
congratulations.
Thank you.
I know. I didn't know you would graduate. I was like, graduate? When I read that, yeah, in the bio. Wow. Good for you.
So I was last around campus in December. I think this fall, obviously, all of the official mandates had been dropped. I think what was continuing to happen is, again, just that silence. And it was interesting because when the last of the mandates were dropped, it was almost in an underhanded way. Like, we got an email, but there were some interesting caveats in the email that said, but if we have a rise in cases, we'll go back. Or, but if this thing, you know, keep it in mind, and we still encourage you to get vaccinated and keep up on your boosters and everything else. There are still a lot of students on campus, and I'm sure professors too, but, you know, I was in with the students for the most part, who were not open to discussing anything with the vaccines or the masks. And it just felt like even this past fall, where it's been 5-6 months since everything's been dropped, there were still on campus, UVM-sponsored vaccine clinics, so you could still go and get your booster. But on the flip side of that, the UVM wasn't sponsoring anything to reflect on the mandates or the anything like that. So that felt like a real hole. And I would still walk around campus and hear students talk about, I just got my booster and everything, and that's fine. But there was never an openness to, well, I didn't get mine. Can we talk about it? So that was something that I was continuing to notice. And I think it was interesting because as much as there was a closed campus during the mask and vaccine mandates, it's almost like it became more closed after. And I think it's probably partially because anybody that had questions before, it felt like it's over, so we don't need to look at anything now.
Wow, so it's like a total sweeping under the rug.
Yeah.
Yeah, and what are some of the residual effects? I mean, there's the threat that it could come back, right?
Right. Right.
Are folks, like, still, are some folks mask dependent? Are some folks being damaged by the vaccines? Did some folks drop out or avoid mm-hmm. coming during and then just, like, their lives crashed and they couldn't come
right.
back?
Right.
What do you see in the people around you?
Yeah. I mean, lots of different things. I think one of the big, I'm sure it wasn't actually that large of a population within the student body, but just a lot of families that I knew had issues with vaccines in the past, so they had already been in the headspace of starting to question new vaccines as they came out. But within those families, circles, or friends that I knew that had some questions, it was interesting to see where their paths took them, because a lot of people that had questions, even some people that were just like, well, I'm not entirely sure, but I think I'll just go ahead. As soon as they made the choice that, well, I don't have another way. I had one friend who I worked with for a while, and she was going into her senior year. She had like 5 classes left she had to take. And the vaccine mandates came out, and she said, I don't want to take them. I know it's not good for me, but I can't. She hadn't heard about the exemptions, and she told me this in retrospect. And then I was like, did you ever look at the exemptions? She said, no. But, you know, UVM, St. Michael's, all those colleges had never offered an option to ever have an exemption. So students felt like, especially students that were in their senior year, well, I only have a few classes. I'll just get through it. But I think what really happened is people fought, you know, people in those groups thought, well, I don't want it, but it's small. I'll just get through it. And so they gave away their choice or their integrity. And some people took it without ever questioning and unknowingly gave something up. So I think a lot of what happened was just people giving their souls away right and left around, especially students. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's a slippery slope yeah. and like a bad habit, a bad yeah. way to start your life. I know a lot of folks to keep their jobs mm-hmm. had to make that choice. Yeah, it's a horrible thing to do to yeah. young folks.
Yeah, I think it was especially difficult, and I could see this in talking to peers, that when you've grown up, most people in the school system, I mean, I was homeschooled for part of my time, so I had a slightly different upbringing, but most people having been in school from kindergarten on, and you're told, you know, as soon as you get to ninth grade, at least for me, when I started to get to ninth grade, you're starting to look towards college. And I think even earlier now, you're starting to look toward what does your future look like. And so when you work through basically K through 12 with the sights that you're going to college, and you have to go to college, get a bachelor's so that you can get a job and survive in the world today, that then you've put students in this situation of feeling like this is the only path. And if I don't take it, I'm going to, you know, life's a huge mystery. Like, I don't know what's going to happen. That as soon as you've already put that in place, and then when you challenge them by saying, well, you're going to have to, you know, give up everything that you've worked on for the last 12 plus years if you don't do this, most people will do it because it feels like a life or death situation.
Yeah, you guys used a really important word, coercion.
Mm-hmm.
And that is definitely what it is. You know, if you don't get this, then you can't finish school. You can't attend school.
Yeah,
and that can have deep psychological impacts on folks. Mm-hmm. But then there are other folks who say, wow, I'm going to use this as an opportunity to find courage and teammates. Mm-hmm. So have you made some friends? Who are some of the other folks working with you?
Yeah, so we ended up with a group of 4 authors on this project, all from the U.S. And 2 of us were from the University of Vermont. I was kind of surprised because I never knew there was anybody else at UVM. And I think we... Isla, who's my co-author at UVM, you know, because we were able to meet in person, so we discussed a lot more than we were able to on our, you know, evening meetings. And one of the things we were always talking about is, without this project, we never would have known there was somebody else. And so that was part of what we wanted to do with the project is, later on, we put these up all around at UVM, just, you know, maybe we're going to meet some people. But it was, yeah, it was an awesome experience to get to work with my 3 other co-authors there and to hear what their experiences were, too, because everybody had incredibly different experiences.
Mm-hmm. And part of the healing process is to be able to talk about it, find folks who will listen and understand.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so how empowering was that, putting posters up, right, around UVM? How were they reacted to? Did they stay up? Were they removed? What was the campus response?
It was mixed. I'll start with the really awesome stuff, is that we started putting them up, I think it was like 2-3 weeks after we initially published it, because we just wanted to have people to have a chance to sign and read before we got there. So when we started putting them out to start with, you know, we found just from people that signed it, I know there were 6 or 7 other UVM students that signed it. And we're like, that's not many, but that's way more than we ever thought, you know, we could be sitting next to them all the time when we'd never know. So it gives you a lot of hope for, you know, sitting next to somebody and just getting to know them, and you never know, they might actually have some of the same thoughts as you. So there were some really awesome things that happened. I think one of our biggest goals for encouraging students to put them up around their campuses, and me and Isla did this ourselves, was just to kind of open the door, because we didn't know how it was going to be received, whether they'd all be torn down, which some of them were, whether they'd be kept up, whether people would read it and sign it or not. And we left them on tables as well as putting them up on bulletin boards, because it is a long chunk of text to read, and we wanted people to have a chance to actually sit down and read it, and maybe sit down and read it when they aren't in a group of peers where you have all of these comments that can very easily get said and you don't have a chance to actually think about it yourself. So we wanted to have a chance for individuals to sit down and look at this in a silent moment. And so I think the biggest thing that we felt like we were able to do is just open the door, because it's something that hadn't happened, at least on our campus before, was just to break the silence a little bit and to leave an opportunity for there to be conversation, whether or not people had it, at least there's an opportunity for it. And yeah, on the flip side of us putting declarations up, we had some interesting experiences with, we used to meet on Wednesdays and put them up, and I'd walk through the same buildings the next day. It might take 24 hours, 48 hours, and I'd start seeing them come down, which in some places wasn't surprising, because we did put them up on doors and other areas that it wasn't strictly, you weren't supposed to put them there, but a lot of other people put them there, so we're like, we'll just sneak in there too. But on bulletin boards where you were allowed to put stuff, that was an interesting place to see them continually taken down, because it usually would take 24 hours. And I don't know if it was certain people were going through, and we would do it weekly, so I don't know if people just started, same people were taking them down, or if it was just random individuals. And so we just would walk through every day with new copies and put them back up.
Good for you. I know. I really found the bulletin board battles during COVID to be some of the most interesting because it really is another human in your community who is censoring, mm-hmm. like the only community space left, you know, that's not digital and not run by some journal, you know, conglomerate or whatever. It was amazing how people seemed to take it upon themselves to censor, you know, bulletin boards. Mm-hmm. But good for you, because I think it just keeps, you know, it shows the tenacity, because it, you know, advertising is, it's the repetition that brainwashed people in the first place, you know, to just buy into stuff and not question and think that was okay. So it does take just as much tenacity and repetition to break through.
Yeah.
That's super exciting. I can see you beaming, too, when your head is. It's like, you know, I'm going to keep speaking no matter what.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We had an interesting, it was the science buildings that we put them up in that had the most kickback, I think. And we put them up in one, I think it was the environmental science building. They weren't my building, so I can't remember exactly. And actually somebody put a paper up in response, and they'd printed out a study that I can't remember the specifics, but I think it was like a study that was done like at the beginning of vaccine rollout, and it was using like retrospective data, which shouldn't make any sense anyway because we didn't have vaccines yet, and it was projecting onto the future of saying like vaccinated versus unvaccinated, and it was supposed to show that, you know, the vaccines were amazing and everything. And if you looked at, like, they put the link to it and stuff, it was from probably not a very reputable source. But it was an interesting thing that Isla actually found it. I didn't see it in person, but she sent me a picture and said, oh my gosh, somebody just put this up. What should we do? And we both were like, immediately our response is, we gotta find our own, like, study or chart and put it up. Because people are gonna see that and they're gonna look at that and just discount what we wrote. And we decided actually not to do anything, because one of the biggest points of our declaration is you need to stop and think about it. And so if people were willing to look at this chart, which was not based on real data, it was based on future projections, and it was based on a lot of other claims that couldn't be backed up. If they want to just take that because it supports what they already believe, that's their right, and that's the point of our declaration, is to stop and think about it. So if they're able to look at those two things together and say, wow, that's got some issues with it, I am interested in what they're saying, they'll get a lot more out of having those two things together.
Yes. Yes. And I love the healing point that this is bringing folks to, folks who want to come to the table. We're sort of realizing, like, hey, people are going to do what they're going to do, live and let live. You've got your philosophy, I've got mine, but we've got to live together, and we have to live in a free space together. And what an amazing thing we can create when we do that.
Yeah.
So this is, I'm speaking today with Lauren Palmer, and she is co-author with some other friends of the Student Declaration 2023, which you can find online, studentdeclaration2023.org. You can sign the declaration there. And can you repeat again, what were your asks, if we can? What was
sure. So we had two main things with the declaration. Our first one was looking at reflecting, particularly on what we saw as the harms and losses. Because it was one part of the main part of reflecting that hadn't been happening. And the second half of the declaration is really looking forward and thinking about what do our universities look like? What do we want them to look like in future? And, you know, what are the mottos that we have and that our universities and colleges are based on? And how can individuals and institutions, but it really starts with the individuals, to say, what are my principles that I can bring to the table, and am I actually following them?
Wow. Yeah, self-responsibility, which is what we hope universities are fostering, right?
Yeah.
So what do you see for the future of universities? Do you have much hope, having just survived with your BA? Are you...
I don't know exactly what's going to happen next, but, you know, I was thinking about it earlier, and I like to think in lots of metaphors, and I was thinking about, actually, I saw a talk earlier from a professor teacher named Benjamin Zander. He's a really awesome guy. He's a conductor. He's a music teacher. And he was talking about downward spirals, and it's really easy to get into, oh, well, say with the COVID situation, well, we're such a small percent of the population, and how is anything ever going to change? How are people ever going to wake up and start to think about things? And that's a really downward spiral. And on the other half of that is, as the glass looks like it keeps emptying out, suddenly you have an empty glass to fill up with something, and there could be a pond next to it. So I think as much as there's a lot of change that looks like it's happening in that downward spiral, there's also a lot of opportunities that are equal to what's going downhill. So I'm excited to see what happens.
Yeah, I like that analogy. A whole pond just waiting. Like, here you're worried about this one little glass. Oh, I love that. And it's like, oh, well, it's abundant. We have tons. Mm-hmm. Like, look at you. You know? And
I mean, maybe you decide you don't even need the glass anymore. You can just go to the pond.
Hey, yeah, why are we focused on a glass? I love it. Yeah, we're going to I really feel like this is an evolutionary step. We're right at the brink of waking up out of history. That's why your studies are so exciting, mm-hmm. because that is exactly where we're at. Are we going to just let this happen again? Or are we going to finally, dink, mm-hmm. wake up? Now, we did not wake up in the middle of it. Maybe we're still in the middle of it, the way they keep threatening to go back. But at least, you know, on this side of it, as they quickly try to, like, pave it over with history, mm-hmm. you know, official history.
Yeah.
Yeah, so what's next for you?
Yeah, so I am actually looking at teaching myself more right now, which I never thought I would do even a month ago coming out of UVM. But I've taught homeschool workshops for 8 years now, maybe.
Oh, great. What like? What kind of?
So I've done a lot of things in the classics area. For all ages from like 8 through high school age, in history, usually British history, that's my thing, ancient Rome, Latin, writing, anything that has to do with the imagination that can wake up people thinking about things in a different way is really what I'm interested in. So I'm hoping to continue on some of those paths.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. So it seems like that's really timely for youth right now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. How would you approach this with younger folks going into colleges? How could you prepare them for what they might face there?
Yeah. I think, especially, say, in the high school classes, I'm teaching 2 high school classes right now just for very small groups. I've got 3 kids in each. And in each of those classes, what I try to do is incorporate activities and things within the classroom that allow them to think. And I think the more that I, as a teacher, can come to the table, not as their high and mighty teacher, but as their equal, and say, this is what I'm thinking, what do you guys think? And to actually try to teach them, not teach them because everybody has that in them, but just to re-show it to them in a way, or kind of chisel it out of them because I know it's in there, is the logic. Like, how do you go from point A to point B? Because if a lot of people were looking at COVID situations and actually going from point A to point B, you'd realize things were totally illogical.
Mm-hmm.
And so offering my students the opportunity to learn, how do you use logic? How do you go from point A to point B? And also just fostering imagination, because I think that was one of the biggest things that was lost in the pandemic, was the shutdown of the imagination. And the imagination has to do with your individuality. And if you're not an individual, you can't really imagine anything. So I think a combination of those things are really what I try to offer to my younger students and also my older students.
Yes. Yeah, definitely. And that safety to be your own individual. It's sort of like, you know, when you described, you know, what you hope to do and what you are doing at the table with your students. Sounds like what that one professor, when they asked you, you know, so what do you guys think about this whole vaccine thing, you know?
Yeah.
You know, they got it at that moment. Mm-hmm. And then here you are. Yes, we need you. We need that, Lauren. That sounds perfect for the future. Logic and imagination and individuality.
Yeah.
Yeah. So any last things that we didn't cover? We have a few minutes left.
Gosh. Let's see. I guess one of the other things that... one of the other things in our declaration that we thought about a lot, and this maybe goes back to classics and history and everything else, is looking back to people or societies that have stood in a similar position where we have. And one of the things that our team was thinking about while we were writing this are, you know, students protesting the Vietnam War, the Chinese students at Tiananmen. Something I didn't mention that we'd also looked at was a series of also open letters that were posted around one of the German campuses. I think it was Munich University, published by a group called the White Rose, and they were a group of students right at the beginning of the war, and they were trying to wake their student population up to, you know, what's going on right now? You know, you're being brainwashed. We need to actually think about things. And so the other thing that we had sort of ended with before our kind of main, like, declaration of we don't want this to happen again was thinking about people that have stood in these shoes in the past that all of our peers today would still look up to. And I think a lot of people want to emulate the students who protested all of those different things. And today, thinking about stepping into those same shoes, that was a really important thing for us. Because it is things that we, they are things that we learn about in classes, are to look up to all of those different folks. And now to actually put that into practice. And I think that's one of the biggest things that's happening at a lot of universities and colleges, is there's a lot of talk. And there's a lot of saying, I'm this, I'm that, I support this, I support that. But that's not really thinking. It's not really asking, who am I? What are my convictions? And so to go back to stepping into those shoes as individuals was a really important thing that we were thinking about.
Wow. What excellent guidance for folks. Definitely all those leaders who came before and then the leaders today. Mm-hmm. Yes, which, Lauren, I'm so glad to bring you to the airwaves here at WMRW. And let me just pull up a little. There we go. So we are coming to the end of our time on the 5-8 show, and we were so lucky today to have Lauren Palmer join us. A graduate in classics from the University of Vermont. She's a native Vermonter, a writer, a homeschool tutor, which it sounds so exciting. I'd love to be in your class. She is also the organizer and co-author of the Student Declaration 2023, which you can find at studentdeclaration2023.org if you would like to sign or pass it along to folks you know who are connected to universities. They really need our support. Those young folks and older folks, I mean, people of all ages go to university, right? And they really want those degrees. They want those studies, those experiences with peers, and they need help because they've been facing all sorts of coercion behind closed doors. It almost is sort of like an abusive situation there. Yeah, so you can support folks by getting involved with the Student Declaration. And thank you, Lauren, for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, and folks listening live here on WMRW, it's February 18th, and we have Betsy waiting outside with the Raggle Taggle music show that I'm going to listen to on my drive home. Lauren's probably going to listen to it, too. It's great. Community radio is the best. And remember, folks listening, you're the greatest as well. Have a fantastic day.